Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. On demand. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360. Sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
2 o'clock hour, Brady and Walker. So, we'll talk some Phil Kessel. We'll do some more. Sure we will. Is it this another footnote in the legacy of Brian Burke's Maple Leafs run? Or is it more a statement on the damage Dave Nonis began to do two summers ago and continued to do in re-signing Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf? Now, that's a popular perception, but it's one I don't necessarily completely subscribe to. I'd have signed Kessel for $8 million. Per year, rather than let him walk or trade him at the deadline. And you know what? Other teams would have done the same thing. Let's back it up again. I'd have signed Dion Phaneuf for $7 million, like the Leafs did at the Winter Classic. Rather than let him walk or trade him at the deadline, I'd have done both those things. So were these bad signings? Were most of us wrong? Or was the level of insulation for two very good hockey players so poorly done pre-Nonis and post-Nonis and during Nonis? The Leafs for a decade, let's be perfectly honest, have been a really badly miscast play. And we've talked about who Phaneuf plays with as a defensive partner, who's Kessel's center and who his other winger is. That question got settled with the acquisition of James Van Riemsdyk. But whether you like the fact that there's certain try and quote-unquote compete level in guys, we can all agree the Leafs were poorly built and poorly managed, and there weren't enough other players to take the tension and the pressure and the heat off Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf. And maybe that won't change in the next couple of years, but expectations will. Again, you buy a house, you want it to work well, you know what you need up top? I'll say it again, insulation.
Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360, sportsnet.ca/590, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan here in Toronto and coast to coast, Sportsnet 360, by the way. Happy Stampede to our viewers in Calgary.
That's starting today. Off, right?
Yeah, very excited.
How did you, I had a neighbor friend of mine set up some Canada Day fireworks yesterday. I hope everyone had a great Canada Day, the 35th ever.
Do you celebrate Canada Day?
Yes. We won our independence from the Philippine Army back in 1971. And I'm telling you,
that's not accurate.
It's ever since then. That doesn't seem right. But yeah, it was a great Canada Day. Will you? You're welcome. Although we're not going to be out of town, you're welcome to come over for July 4th fireworks.
No, I don't celebrate that.
Stars and Stripes cake.
Yeah, every day is Canada Day.
Stars and Stripes cookies.
I celebrate our country every day, Greg.
Just accept that we have great neighbors. We're great neighbors to them. They're great neighbors to us. Great neighbors.
I'm not going to start an international incident.
Who would you rather have
on the show today?
Give me another country you'd rather have as a southerly neighbor.
Morocco. That's just on the top of my head.
Yeah.
New Zealand.
Yeah, Libya. Wouldn't that be great? Great. Fantastic. I feel a little safer
this
crossing...
This sounds racist.
That's not. I feel a little safer crossing the Peace Bridge than going into Tripoli. Sorry about that.
Golly. Italy.
Maybe New Zealand.
Good food in Italy.
Okay, fine.
Switzerland.
I'll give you that.
You know what? Switzerland would be a great neighbor. They got the cheese and the chocolate and the watches and the knives.
Niederreiter agrees with that sentiment.
Sven Berchi.
So I'm reminded, you might have had something to say, but I'm reminded how we were sitting there in Ann Arbor. And oh my God, 2 days earlier, we got to skate on that ice there at Michigan Stadium. And Phaneuf had just signed the deal the day before, on New Year's Eve, and we're getting ready for Leafs Red Wings, and we did an early morning show.
It felt like they didn't have many options.
They didn't have many options, and we all just said, so important, big project, get Phaneuf a guy to play with, insulate that D, make it stronger. That was Morgan Riley's rookie season that was happening at the time. Jake Gardner, and remember, this was a Leaf team defending a playoff berth, and at that time on January 1, things were kind of still on the uptick, right? They were happy with their goaltending. They were in a playoff spot. There wasn't a lot of angst, and some of the fan base had angst and concern because they didn't win very conventionally. They didn't possess the puck well. When they won, they score a lot of goals, et cetera, et cetera. We were right there last January.
The bottom line with that season, with 14 games to go,
they looked like they were going to the playoffs. Like, they really looked like they were going to the playoffs. And then Jonathan Bernier gets hurt, and the bottom absolutely falls out.
I always tell people they had to lose 12 of 14 to miss. So we're sitting there on Jan 1, and neither of us are saying, among some who were saying, and I guess in our industry too, what a huge mistake signing FNUF 49. How can they overpay him like that? And we would have said two things. One, what's your other option? Who else do they have right now if they're going to continue making playoff runs? If that's the plan, and it was then, and easily someone's giving Dion FNUF $7 million per on an AAV, and probably for the same amount of term. I don't want to argue and scrap with people who goes, well, he only would have got 6 years. I bet you he'd have got seven for seven. Yeah. You know,
and I think Dion FNUF's going to be here for a little while still. So I almost want to separate him from this conversation. But the Phil Kessel thing is interesting because we probably both would have signed him at that time, and it said a lot that a guy was going to stay here. He is an elite player. He's not everything you want in your best player, your highest paid player to be. We both know that. We both agree with that. But sitting here today, were the Toronto Maple Leafs wrong to sign that contract with Phil Kessel? It's tough to say they weren't. Hey, listen, the current regime of Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock and Kyle Dubas and Mark Hunter, they obviously thought that was the wrong move from Dave Nonis. Hindsight's 2020. I don't know what they would have done in that situation, but it felt like they had no options. But who's the comparable? And here's the thing. Who's the comparable for a Dion FNUF? I think a Brent Seabrook is closer than people like to think. And the question is, who's the comparable for Phil Kessel? Is it a Marian Gabrick of a few years ago? Is it Patrick
Kane? It's tough with Kane because we've done that with Kane before, and maybe Kane's just so separated where we're like, it doesn't. But again,
he's better.
And the things you don't worry about. And here are the things I never worried about with Phil Kessel. And this is documented. I'll tell you what they are in a sec. We'll give phone numbers out first.
Is it the guy that used to play in Pittsburgh and James Neal? If the guys here were James Neal and Brent Seabrook, would we have the same? Like, would this situation have worked out the same way? There's my question.
That's a reasonable question. 416-870-0590, star 590, or 888-666-0590. Were the Maple Leafs wrong to re-sign Kessel? We'll leave it there. We won't talk about FNUF until something happens with FNUF, but we won't think he's back with this hockey club, and we've thought that for some amount of time. 416-870-0590, star 590. Did the Maple Leafs make a mistake? What would you have done differently in going into the 13-14 season when they did re-sign him? They're coming off a playoff berth. Here's a healthy player. Here's a guy who had an 80-point season right after he signed that particular contract. And in the short year, he had 52 points in 48 games. And he had 4 goals in the playoffs. Remember what everybody was worried about in the playoffs? Oh, Boston, Chara. Well, he had 6 points and 4 goals. He seemed to exorcise that go somewhat.
At the Olympic Games.
Oh, my God.
Playing Olympics, with and against the best. He was one of the best players in the U.S. side, too. And I want to preface this, too, by saying, and if you're calling in today, we want to get your thoughts. But I think across the board, everyone does recognize here, hey, did the Leafs get enough for Phil Kessel? No, they probably didn't. They almost assuredly did not. Not in terms of a hockey trade deal value. I don't think they did. But the lesson yesterday, we talked about this in 1 o'clock hour. The lesson we learned yesterday was this organization was so done with Phil.
They were done.
Even more than we have discussed and would have anticipated. There was no way, almost no matter what the return on a trade was, there was no way they were not going to trade Phil Kessel before the season started.
I got a lot of, like, there's other people in our business. I can't stand it when people are like, the media and Phil Kessel, because we all do different things and we all have we hope, unique perspectives. We don't just follow others around like cows, okay? But the one thing I will adamantly stand on, and I said it earlier, I'd have brought Phil Kessel back. I wish there could have been a gap bridge somewhere where they say, listen, we're thinking about moving you, but this is your last chance. If you say you want to stay and you mean it, this is Mike Babcock. Get going. Get ready for a great offseason. But what I've never criticized Phil for is how he is with the media. I don't care about that. I know there's a lot of people, and yes, there's been an incident or two where I'm like, gee, I wish he wouldn't handle it that way. And I've never... I've never made a fat joke. I mean, I don't care what he looks like. If he's playing every damn game and scoring 80 points a season and putting up 35 and 35 every year, and he did all that, I don't care what he looks like. I could care less. Do I care what a sports writer looks like? Well, no, not unless I'm married to him. So I care about his output. People should care about our output as broadcasters. And I thought it was despicable, some of the cheap shots that Phil's had to have thrown his way, and some of the ridiculous stuff like, hey, there's 4 days before the Bruins playoff series starts. Phil left without talking to any of us. Yes, you got 3 days left where you can get quotes from him. You okay with that? And if a Phil Kessel quote's making your story, be a better writer. If it's at all possible for some of you.
I would say this. You should care about your players' commitment and dedication and fitness level. Absolutely you should. That said, were we ever at the point, like Phil Kessel didn't have a good year last year, but nobody on this team did. Has fitness had anything to do with his production or lack thereof so far in his career? I would argue no. Could that day be coming one day?
Right?
Maybe.
Yeah, he turns 28 at the start of this year, and maybe there's a cliff he falls off at some point.
I think that hit with Danny Heatley eventually, but when he was scoring 50 goals and still didn't, you know, like the old treadmill, did it bother people? No.
Yeah.
Of course it did. Or at least it shouldn't.
The irony is you got a guy retiring today in Martin St. Louis that obviously people wish that they'll say it and they'll write it. Oh, if only some of Martin St. Louis was inside Phil Kessel. Maybe that changes. Maybe there'll be changes that Phil makes when he gets to Pittsburgh. But either way, guess what? Guess what he's going to do when he gets there? He's going to score a ton of goals, and he's going to stay healthy, more than likely, and he's going to be really productive there. Did the Leafs make a mistake way back when they signed Phil Kessel to that extension? Pat in Richmond Hill, go ahead. You're on Brady and Walker.
No, I did not think that they did. We had to do that. A couple things I'll say, guys. One, I hated the original Phil Kessel trade, but it happened. Mm. But this is whatever we may think, he's a world-class player still. Okay, I think we got absolutely ripped off yesterday. And I'm going to give you a couple points that I thought were in our favor. Number one, Lemieux was yapping how they had to improve this two lines. So that's one thing. Rutherford, on the second year of a two-year contract, they had all the pressure. Two, you can be above 5'9", 160 pounds, and be skilled. Montreal tried this, didn't work. Edmonton, three number ones, all small players, didn't work. What makes our guys think that they're smarter above all this, that it's going to work here? And I'll give you another point, if you can answer this for me. We gave them our second for their first. The difference between these two picks could be 26.
And there's a third coming back also.
The first round pick is absolutely stupid to mention. All we've done is they're probably going to have a high first. We're going to have a high late first. We're going to have a high second.
Here, the difficulty with that is if you can maximize the, thanks for the phone call. We'll take one more on this. If you could maximize the picks, Andrew, that's one thing. But it's a little chicken and egg. There was never a team that was going to screw up like the Leafs did in 09, 10 and finish 29th. And then presto, there wasn't even going to be a team to finish in the top 10. And the Pens aren't missing the playoffs anyway. But just in case, they lottery protected it just in case they end up in the lottery. And don't forget, there's the lottery changes this year to where you're just going to get more chances to move up. So even if you are drafting 14th when the season ends, you got a great opportunity to move up. There wasn't going to be a suitor that worked for Phil Kessel and worked for Brendan Shanahan that wasn't going to be a cup contender. Cup contenders were the only teams that were ever going to be in the mix to trade for Phil Kessel.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. It was always going to be. Now listen, Edmonton Oilers fans had the same refrain, I think, leading up to the deadline. They traded David Perron for the Penguins' first-round pick. Oh, why would we trade a top-six forward who's controllable for a couple of years for 30th overall? It ended up being 16th overall.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a big difference. A lot can happen. And a first-round pick is always better than a second-round pick. But he's not wrong. Like, yes, I think Pittsburgh did really well here. We'll see what Kapanen ends up being. But this is not a great return for a guy that doesn't get hurt, scores 30 goals every year, and is still fairly young. Like, he's not on the north side of 30. But the Maple Leafs didn't purposely take the second or third best deal here. This was the best deal they could get before the season began. They weren't willing to let him come back.
I forget what that sticky stuff is when I was a kid. You used to throw against the wall and it would stick and then crawl down like creepy crawlers. There's been a lot of that about this trade, but there was never an opportunity to get Olli Mäntä, and there was never an opportunity to get Pouliot. There was never an opportunity to even toss Kunitz into your top six. This was the deal, and Pittsburgh waited it out from Friday night, and eventually, you know, I'd be fascinated to see who called who first yesterday morning,
yeah.
But I bet you it was the Leafs calling the Penguins saying, okay, you know, you win the bluff. This is the guy you're going to get. Angelo and Weston, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan with Brady and Walker. Go ahead, Angelo.
Hey, man, how's it going?
You know, good.
Absolutely, we should have traded for Phil Kessel. We signed him, and we were supposed to build around him. We even signed Bozak so that we could sign Kessel all over again. If we're not going to pay him $8 million a year, how much do you expect to pay for a 30-goal scorer? $4 or $5 million? They don't exist.
And the concept, you know, you're not wrong about that. The number one center thing also is tricky because Andrew and I have kicked this around. And number one centers, the one thing Nonis would always say is, and I don't think it's totally wrong, but it's not 100% right either, is just so impossible to get a number one center. Well, guys can adapt to certain scenarios and then start to play like they're a number one center. Jason Spezza gets traded to Dallas.
Yeah, but that's probably a bad example.
Why?
Because he's not a number one center.
Spezza's not?
No.
Oh, boy.
Jason Spezza's not a winner. Right?
That's what guys are talking about. I don't subscribe to that theory.
I think a better example. Well, hey, listen, Tyler Seguin got moved for, and it's still inexplicable. That trade is like the Josh Donaldson trade here. That's how we talk about that. Boston didn't get anything for him. I would think a better example, because I think the hockey world knows what Jason Spezza is. I'm talking about Derek Brassard, Kyle Turris. Right? These were guys that developed into number one centers.
I was going to say that, but there's Spezza moving, and there's Turris moving up the depth chart, and not that they didn't miss a beat, but there wasn't a transition that was difficult. He proved he could be that guy.
And the issue was not necessarily what Phil Kessel made, and it wasn't, well, what do you expect to pay for a guy that gets that many goals? Phil Kessel, for better or for worse, was the face of the franchise. He was the guy. And they weren't comfortable with him being that. Like, Patrice Bergeron gets far less goals and points than Phil Kessel, but he's the face of the Boston Bruins.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. Lots more on this with Damian Cox after 2:35. We're very pleased to welcome in our next guest, who's been covering the NBA for nearly a decade. You can find his work on SI.com right now. And this is the greatest thing on the site, is every single signing, and I'm sure when trades come up, is going to get a grade to some extent. Right now,
what did Carroll get, an A?
A C.
Oh, a C.
Like, I feel like it's my first semester of university. But I didn't go to any classes. I want to point out that's what all the C's were about. Then my parents said, stop wasting your tuition money, and I really got a lot better. Ben Golliver joins us, senior NBA writer from SI. See, if we all had B's and C's, none of us would be in this business, right? Is that a fair and accurate, Ben? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear you. No, I feel like I do have my red pen out, though, and I'm just marking every single thing up for the next 2 weeks. And, you know, that Carroll one, as it stands right now, it's one of our lowest grades. I'm sure that's probably not the most popular news up there in Canada, but, you know, we have to look at it from a variety of different ways. And, you know, clearly it makes sense fit-wise. The money seemed a little bit steep. And I just think people should sort of keep expectations in line whenever you're giving the biggest contract of a guy's career to that guy. I mean, that's always a situation. It's a little dicey. I mean, he's probably a safe guy in terms of, you know, character issues, locker room stuff to invest in. But it's a guy who made $8 million over the first 6 years of his career.
Yeah.
Now he's going to make almost double that every year for the next 4 years.
Is part of it the value of the deal and the term, and is part of it just the fact that, listen, even on a 60-win team in a bad conference and in a not great division, it was almost as bad a division as the Atlantic last year, that it's just not the first. He's not the fourth player you think of when you think of the Hawks. You're going, why are they successful? It's Horford, it's Korver, it's Teague, it's not this guy.
Yeah, if you look at Atlanta's perspective, I mean, they had a clear choice. I mean, they needed to pay up either Millsap or Carroll, and they didn't have money for both, right? Because that was going to get really expensive. And they made the obvious decision. I mean, Paul Millsap is central to what they did. They're not going to win anywhere near 60 games again next season if they don't bring him back. So he was clearly their first priority, and a guy like Carroll gets lost in the shuffle because he's just further down the pecking order. That doesn't mean he's a bad player. It just means you need to have realistic expectations about what he can do. You know, I've seen a lot of people you know, talk about his physicality as a defender. And to me, it's more about his effort level and his technique and his motor than, you know, truly outstanding wing, you know, defensive size and physicality. I mean, if you go back to that Eastern Conference Finals, I mean, clearly nobody's really stopping LeBron one-on-one, but there's, you know, a big range in terms of how hard you make him work. And I thought, you know, Atlanta just really, really struggled to, you know, have any success against LeBron. LeBron was just bullying those guys to death. And if Carroll's your primary wing defender in those situations, you kind of have to hold him accountable for that.
Yeah.
But I think Toronto's in an interesting spot, right? Because they want to win now. And they've also got pretty good deals for guys like DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if you splurge on a pretty well-fitting need. And Carroll certainly is that. I mean, he does address one of their biggest weaknesses last year. I'm sure Dwayne Casey's elated to have a new defensive presence in the locker room. I think it's okay to overpay a little bit for a guy like that because you've already got Lowry and DeRozan under contract at reasonable numbers.
Yeah, and I was going to say that too. You don't have to love the value here. But then again, I mean, did we see a bargain yesterday? No, I don't think that even exists in the NBA right now. But when you look at where the Raptors really needed help, does the fit not make it okay? And also, to follow up to that, what happens to Terrence Ross now? So Carroll is going to be starting in Terrence Ross's spot. Is he an afterthought now?
I'm not sure if he's an afterthought, but I think his job description just narrows a little bit right now. You know, you don't necessarily have the pressure of being that huge big minute guy who's got to, you know, burst out and be an all-around player who's got to fit next to your stars who are going to, you know, demand the ball and, you know, step up when called upon in that starting lineup. I think now maybe his job gets a little bit easier. You know, he moves to a bench role and probably gets to focus more on just being sort of a microwave type scorer off the bench. Or alternatively, you know, he becomes a trade chip down the value tier. He can kind of dangle out there for teams who are looking for young talent and maybe take, you know, willing to take a risk on that. But I don't know about you guys. I kind of think like Terrence Ross had a pretty good shot at things. You know, I don't think he was treated unfairly these last couple of years. And I just don't think he quite did it. That's not a huge knock on him. He's a young guy. I mean, everybody comes along at different rates. But, you know, I think it's a pretty easy line of decision if you're Dwayne Casey. You go forward with your three big dollar guys as your three perimeter players. You've got Jonas in the middle, and you just go from there.
Yeah, I mean, they gave him 125 starts. You know, is there time to give him 80 more? No, probably not. Ben Golliver's joining a senior NBA writer for SI. You can find his great work at SI.com. I feel like the Thompson money is outrageous, but there's some outrageous money. You can't get caught up in that. But re-signing Love, I think a lot of other East contenders were hoping that Butler heads to the West, Love goes to the West. Neither of those things happened. It sets up like that's disappointing news to me for the Raptors, for Atlanta, even for a team like Milwaukee, that Cleveland and you know, Chicago kept their offseason prizes. That people were hoping there'd be a little chaos amongst the Cavs, and there isn't going to be.
There's no question. Everybody in the East right now is playing for second. I think the biggest X factor of this summer in the Eastern Conference was, is owner Dan Gilbert in Cleveland willing to, you know, match their team motto and go all in and just spend to keep everybody? Because the way the cap works out, it's so much easier for them to retain their own talent as opposed to going out there and signing other players. They don't have cap space like Toronto did to make a move like a Damari Carroll. They just don't have it, and they're not going to be able to add any sort of talent, you know, in that price range other than retaining their own guys. So not only are they going to bring Thompson back and Shumpert back, those are two really key pieces of their playoff rotation, to also be able to get Love to come back on a long-term deal so you don't have to deal with all the rumors here over the next 12 months is a huge score. I think so far to date, you know, it's been 2 days of free agency, but I think the Love deal is the single biggest signing we've seen, the most important move we've seen this summer, without doubt, because now you've got the ability to have a really, really elite offense. With the, you know, building on the big three superstars. And then you've also got the versatility of being able to play big and play small to kind of pound teams or to try to spread them out. And those are options that, you know, Cleveland just didn't have in the postseason because of the injury factor. So, you know, to me, Cleveland's coming back totally loaded. As soon as they, you know, re-sign LeBron officially and get all these other contracts done officially, they're going to peg in as the clear-cut number one team in the Eastern Conference. Everybody else is chasing them.
Give us about 45 seconds. That's about all we got on the Knicks and the Lakers, because I feel like, and I got to reverse my thinking, and I think others do too, and hopefully they will, that, hey, those teams can just, it's just the brand name and they'll find players. Kevin Love didn't want to bother with the Lakers. LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't impressed by them. And then today, Greg Monroe gets a max offer and says, you know where I'll go instead? The state of Wisconsin. So we're here with the Knicks and Lakers. Is it Carmelo in New York and Kobe in L.A.? Like, the players don't want to be in these cities. We've oversold that over the last half decade, haven't we?
Here's what I love, and the Greg Monroe decision makes my heart flutter, because I love when guys decide on basketball reasons, not on off-court reasons or market reasons or whatever else. I love when a guy says, I can be a good fit there. They need my skills. I'm going to get big minutes. I can be the guy. I don't like when they say, oh, I just want to chase celebrity in Los Angeles or New York. And I think, actually, if you're a Raptors fan going forward here, I think players, you know, this is a sign maybe players are getting a little bit shrewder about picking their spots. And if the money is equal, they're going to be looking to on-court reasons potentially rather than off-court reasons. You know, it's been a long time since either the Lakers or Knicks really landed a big-time free agent. I guess the Knicks, if you want to call, Amari Stoudemire that guy. You know, the Lakers, you probably have to go back to Shaq when you're talking about free agents, because everybody else has really been trades. I think some of that market stuff is really overblown.
I guess Steve Nash, but it was disastrous, and he picked for family reasons rather than contending. Yeah.
Yeah, and well, that was a sign of trade too. So I mean, right. they're putting pieces into that. So if you're talking about pure free agency signings, I mean, it's a pretty long time ago to get there. So I like it. I think that could help parity become a bigger deal in the NBA. I think that would be better for everybody, small markets included. But to me, I just wish everybody would do it like Greg Monroe. You know, he had a real risk for himself in terms of waiting on that qualifying offer for a year to get himself into a better situation. I think the fit in Milwaukee is really good. And I totally commend him for his thought process and his decision making. Let's just hope everybody, follows Greg Monroe's footsteps.
Hey, Ben, thanks for this. We appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
That's Ben Golliver, senior NBA writer for SI. The one thing about the Damari Carroll, it's unfair to look at that conference final and to say, LeBron ate him up and he was hurt. Like, he was really hurt. And it was even a surprise for Carroll to come back in game two like he did, just to be on the floor with his team. Yeah. Like, I don't think we can look at that series in particular and say he's a good defender to a point.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last Raptors player that they've really been proud of as a defender, as a guy that those guys can become real crowd favorites. And they don't have to be huge, like shot-blocking 6'11 robots either to make you pretty happy with it. People like Patterson, but it's a different kind of defense. It's it's blocked shots, but it's not rebounds.
Doug Christie, that's going back a long time, though, right?
Yeah. It has been a long time. There's been a lot of people play the three in Toronto, and you love the points and you love the athleticism, but you don't necessarily love everything else. When we come back, Damian Cox will join us from the NHL on Sportsnet. We'll also play some snippets of this interview former Niners coach and Bears quarterback, Colts quarterback Jim Harbaugh had, now running the show at University of Michigan, head with Colin Cowherd. And we'll both, maybe we can both over the next few minutes recount some awful interviews we've had, maybe awful interview experiences.
Yeah,
we've had
more bad ones than good ones, to be honest.
What, today?
No, just overall.
Oh, okay.
In our careers, yeah. We're batting about 50%.
We're thinking about job interviews, us trying to get jobs more than actually interviewing people on the radio for a big station or anything like that. I've had some bad ones. So that's coming up. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back to Brady and Walker on TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, coming up, Damian Cox in a little bit, and we'll let you hear this Jim Harbaugh, Colin Cowherd interview. We got a couple, we get Damian on, a couple house, do you want to do the house cleaning items? The one involves this is a really behind-the-scenes look. One's an email, and the other involves food. Do you want to do the food or the email? You want to mention the food.
I'll do the food.
Food.
Do we have time? All right, so
but keep the cameras on us. Don't pan to the food.
No.
We don't want to.
We get a lot of free stuff dropped off here.
Not our show.
At the station. At Sportsnet. And today,
CFL gift packs.
I can't get too specific, but there's a number of new fast food companies that have their new lobster dishes.
Oh, okay.
Basically, one of these fast food companies today delivered these lobster dishes, lobster sandwiches here, and
a lot of them.
A lot of
lobsters head to.
They've been out there for like 4 hours, and people are still going and grabbing them. Like, I'm not an elitist, Greg. I'm not an elitist, but like, I separate my like lobster eating and fast food. Like, that's the two should not be together.
Can you get a steak sandwich at a sub place and then go? You can go the next night to the Kangaroo's, Chris, and you go, hey, more steak. Like, don't be snobbish about steak.
No, there's something
steak's great every day of the month.
Yes, but there's something dangerous about seafood, isn't there? Anyway,
all right, I'll mention the email in a little bit. Damian Cox had, of course, a busy day on air yesterday, and part of the panel that broke the Phil Kessel trade joins us from the NHL on Sportsnet. Right, steak's great any day of the week. Or are you a vegan now? I can never. It's Merrick, right? He's the only one.
Yeah, it's the Merrick's, the guy you don't want to go out to dinner with.
No, well,
he is lovely company, but you know, it's tree bark and grass and all kinds.
Yeah,
tree
bark. He's showing off his arms with those sleeveless shirts. It's just for fine dining establishments. It's a little too much.
I would agree with that. You guys, before we talk about, I can tell you, Rafael Nadal is on the verge of going out of Wimbledon, although he may be able to live another game. So there you go. I know you guys always want to talk tennis.
Of us does. Don't get us confused. We're not twins.
Is this the one on clay?
You know, honestly.
Or that's the other one.
Like, I'm on vacation next week, and I'm leaving the Women's World Cup final recap to Walker solo on Monday, and then the lead up to all the important Wimbledon matches next week.
It's going to be something.
Will you come in and sit with him? I'll give you money out of my wallet to come in and sit with him next week.
My vacation started today. I won't come in and sit with anybody.
I know. I picked the wrong week. You're right. Yeah, 5-4 in the fourth set. And it's weird seeing a 10 next to Nadal's name, too, but that's seeds are seeds, right?
Yeah. So, anyway.
So we were kicking around whether, going back to the fall of 13, whether or not the Leafs made a mistake in the extension of Phil Kessel, I didn't see a way around it. I didn't see any other way to do business. I think this is the fault lies here in what I describe as insulation. And you can make that case certainly with Dion Phaneuf as well, that a lot of people made the case, these are good players. You can pay them this if you want. Let's start finding better players to play with them. And from day one for either player, Dion Phaneuf's never had a really good partner, and maybe Phil Kessel hasn't been properly insulated with forwards that can play with him either.
Yeah, and maybe the two of them really were never surrounded with the leaders that would allow them to be other kinds of players than what they're forced to be. But I really think, you have to go back and put everything in context. At the time, the Leafs had just made it to the playoffs, had lost a very disappointing seventh game to the Boston Bruins, in which Phil Kessel, for the first time, had really quieted many of his critics by playing hard and by doing some really good things. He had proven to be a consistent 30 to 35 goal scorer, and this was an opportunity. Well, they really had to. It was either pay him or let him go to unrestricted free agency. And it's easy now to say, well, they should have just let him go. Well, if they let him go, they would have got nothing for him. And now at least they've got prospects and a first-round pick and that sort of stuff. So a mistake, well, obviously it didn't work out, did it? I mean, it didn't work out. He didn't become, the stalwart, the guy they could lean on for the rest of the contract. So it didn't work out for him. It didn't work out for them. But was it a mistake moving on? I'm not sure what the other option would have been to have traded him. And there were certainly points during his career early where I wondered if that was the case, but they didn't. Look, a lot of people lost their jobs over decisions that were made, not just with Phil Kessel, but with a lot of other people. So at the end of the day, as I said, it didn't work out. So I guess if it was a mistake, then I guess it was because it didn't work out, did it?
Damian Cox, our guest, Brady and Walker. I think the one thing I found myself underestimating the last few weeks, we knew that the new regime and Brendan Shanahan, they preferred to move off of Kessel and to trade him.
Yeah.
The return is a little underwhelming. I don't know what we expected, but was this not evidence that, like, it was more than preference? There was no way that this would ever be salvaged. Like, there was no way Phil was playing one more game for this organization.
I think, by the way, Rafael Nadal is out of Wimbledon.
We do have it on in the studio. Give us some credit. We do have it on in the studio.
I want to let your listeners know. boy, oh
Illinois.
Dustin Brown is the name of the player. No, LA King.
Not that Dustin Brown.
Brown. I didn't think the guy who was going to beat Nadal would have hair down to his waist. Dustin Brown's a really interesting guy, but we'll save that discussion for another time. On Kessel, look, he may really do good things for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't think he was going to do good things for the Toronto Maple Leafs anymore. So, you know, I think the one open question is, could they have let Mike Babcock work with him and either had him perform better for the Leafs or had him raise his value on the market? The problem was they really only had one team to negotiate with. And whenever you're in that case, even when they're a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins that was desperate, really, to add a key offensive piece for their own reasons, anytime you're in that situation, your returns are always going to be limited. I think they did okay. I think they did. It might turn out they did really well, depending on how the prospects they picked up, Scott Harrington and Kasperi Kapanen, how they turn out, what they do with the first round pick. Some of that's up to their drafting. Some of it's up to their developing. But we do know one thing. They saved, somewhere between $35 and $40 million. They bought themselves some cap flexibility. That means a lot in the NHL these days.
It's tough to also criticize what they did yesterday via free agency. They didn't give any three-year contracts out. They had, whether they had to or not, they gave one to a 38-year-old Stefan Robita last year, but they were very astute with the guys they brought in. I also think, we talk about insulation, it makes any question about Kapanen at 19 or Nylander at 19 playing with the Leafs almost a moot point. They'll probably both start as Marlies because spots are filled. Spots were filled by Parenteau. Spots were filled by Arcabello. I think those are NHL spots, and those players, and Spalling, those players will be here.
And that's part of the idea. I mean, you remember last year, William Nylander and Connor Brown, they did not, no matter what they did, both did pretty well in the minors. They were not going to get a chance to the NHL. They're trying to change how they approach things. I mean, that would be one of the encouraging signs. If I was a Leaf fan, that'd be one of the encouraging signs I would see from the Shanahan regime, that they're going to take that different approach. I think the one decision out of all the, I think there's a lot of confusing things here, and we're still trying to see, okay, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? They've made one thing crystal clear. They are not going to be a bad team and a cap team. If they're going to be a bad team, they're not going to be a cap team. And their hope is that one day they'll be good enough that they'll be forced to spend to the cap. And I think you're seeing around the league, because a number of teams are in that situation, Philadelphia missing the playoffs, they're a cap team, Boston, you know, Vancouver at the cap, but really just a first-round team. I think you're going to see more and more teams say, unless we're Tampa Bay or Chicago, we do not need to be a cap team. Once upon a time, you had to demonstrate to your fans, look, fans, we're doing all we can. We're spending as much as possible. People understand now that spending to the cap actually can hurt you as much as it can help you.
Yesterday was pretty amazing as a whole. We all know that the class wasn't the best we've seen in a long time, but it's tough to really find the deal that you shake your head at and say, well, that one's not going to end pretty. The closest thing, too, is I guess, Sakura to Edmonton. But even then, it felt more like a Strite to the Islanders or Wisniewski to Columbus or Weidman to Calgary. It was kind of an overpay, but an expected overpay.
Well, and you know, he's only 29 years old, so there's at least he's 29 years old, so there's at least a reasonable expectation that he should be able to play through some or most of that contract. And I think that was part of the Edmonton order saying, look, we understand we have to overpay. We have to understand, so to change the perception of our franchise, that this is a place nobody will come to play for if they have a choice. Well, Sakara had a choice, and he chose the Edmonton Oilers. Mark Letestu did as well. So I think those are reasons to overpay, but I kind of agree with you. I mean, look, Matt Beleski didn't hit quite the home run that people were thinking he might. Probably Mike Green did as well as anybody, but he got 3 years. So he got the money from Detroit, the $6 million a year, but he got 3 years. That'll be an interesting to watch, that one to watch for me, because he was very comfortable and played very well as the number four or five guy in Washington making $6 million a year. Now he goes to Detroit where, other than Nicholas Cronwall, and depending on what you think of Dan DeKeyser, he might be number one, number two, number three. So all of a sudden he's gone back to being the guy or close to the guy which was a situation where he didn't necessarily play his best hockey. So he did as well as anybody. But, I agree with you. I mean, a lot of money, but no, there were no Clarkson contracts. There were certainly no Bobby Holik contracts. There were a lot more like, you know, what Alex Hemsky got from Dallas last year, which, it's not a good contract, but it doesn't kill you, does it?
Yeah, yeah. We didn't see either an Ehrhoff or a Villalaino deal on the same day from the same team.
A Scott Gomez, you know, one of those big ones where you sort of go, whoa, that one's going to hurt.
Yeah. Hey, we can't thank you enough for this. You guys were great yesterday. Enjoy the vacation. Don't forget to PVR Tim and Sid, 5 to 7 on Sportsnet. I don't know if you heard about it.
I've heard that. Yeah, when are they on? No, yes, I know when they on. I'm anxious to see the show.
Yeah,
see you guys.
Second show today. There's Damian Cox joining us on Brady and Walker.
And I didn't ask him if he thinks Pliskova is going to go really good things here.
That's a car. That's not even
singles.
No, that's a car
no,
maker.
No, she's
that's like a Lada.
I believe she's Czech.
You know why I know that? Because Michael Neuver was at Wimbledon yesterday, and someone tracked him down, and he said, yeah, I signed with Philadelphia, was it yesterday? Exactly,
yes.
Flyers. In case you just missed it, Dustin Brown did indeed beat Rafa Nadal in the third round of Wimbledon. Nadal's past four Wimbledons, really quick. Third round, fourth round, first round, second round. Made the final in 2011. Hasn't been back above the quarterfinals in the last 4 years. So let's cut out him being a grass court contender anytime soon again. So we I have one radio interview that went so off the rails very quickly. Do you have one? We're going to play this Colin Calvert, Jim Hart. Who was it? I'll tell you who mine was in a sec.
Mine was Daniel Negreanu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did it go so poorly? Was it early in the morning? Was he not awake?
It was in the morning. He had obviously just woken up.
Stayed up all night playing poker.
And it was doing, the interview was one of those things where it was like there was a company that through him was doing this big contest. Like it was to help him out. It was a promo for him. And he was basically like, they don't really give me the details of these things. I'm like, well, then why am I talking to you?
I interviewed the former Brian Williams, not that one and not that one, but which one? Basketball player that became Bison Daly. And it was
That's like the worst Brian Williams.
Yeah. And a year later, he was killed by pirates. But I don't think that's related to him being a bad interview. That was just a tragedy. So yesterday, Colin Cowherd from ESPN Radio was spending some time with Jim Harbaugh, the Michigan football coach, former Niners coach.
It's a pretty good interview.
It sounds like it's a winner, right? Here's how it went.
Season opens September 3rd at Utah. Coach, when do you put in a game plan? How does it work?
It's a process. It's been going on for months and will continue over the next 2 months. Mm-hmm.
You're not a rear-view mirror guy, it doesn't seem like. You're kind of forge your way, go, get stuff.
This feels like one of those where you ask like 50 questions on a...
Well, you're giving me slow... You're not giving me a ton to work with, Coach, so I just want to find something out about Jim Harbaugh, the human being.
Right. Okay.
I want to find out about Jim Harbaugh. I'm a player right now, and I want to play for a bunch of schools. I'm listening to Jim Harbaugh. I want to play for Jim. Well, I mean...
Do you have any eligibility, Colin?
No, and I can't play worth a damn. What I'm saying is I'm trying to kind of... I want Jim Harbaugh, the guy. Because I bring all these coaches on, and I want the guy. I mean, what? I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
No, if I was.
It basically, there was nothing else from there. And he said, hey, I love you, but it's not working out.
Yeah, like
we've all said that before.
He kept firing all these questions at him. And it was like a war of attrition where Harbaugh just like made up his mind early. Like, this is a long interview. And
he did
ask 50 questions. And Harbaugh from the very beginning was like, I'm not giving him anything. I'm just like one word answers, two word answers. It's painful. Were all the questions great?
No,
maybe not.
No, I'm sure Coward would tell you it's not his best moment, but he tried. Like, we didn't play the 5.5 minutes where he's digging pretty deeply at the end of the day. So 3 o'clock hour coming up. We will touch on Jose Reyes. The Raptors make a splash yesterday. Is it the final splash they can make? And speaking of splashes, we'll go from splashes to smashes. Dominic Moore with an outstanding charity ping pong tournament that actually we're going to be part of.
That's quite the segue.
Splashes
right
and smashes. Yeah, write that one down for... years from
you
now.
You know Colin Cowherd, I'll tell you that.
It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360.